So please turn to the first base sheet in the five prayer book, and we'll chant Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times, the four immeasurables in English, and then in Tibetan. Taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha taya ta mune mune maha munaye soha. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sentientam chedewadong de eight times, and then Green Tower's mantra seven times. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tadatu Tadatu Re Soha. 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 Now the children are free to go to their classes. Oh, wait a minute. Sit down, sorry. Go on. Okay. Okay. So, there's a special position we sit in when we meditate. I want to see if you can do this. Okay. Okay. Take your left foot. You know which one's your left foot? Okay. Left foot. Put it on your right thigh. Can you get it up there? Yeah.
You can do it. Now take your right foot. You know which one's your right foot? Yeah, can you? And put that one up on your left thigh. Oh, you got it? Yeah, you got it? Okay. Now sit up real, real straight. Okay. Sit up real, real straight. Good. Okay, take your right hand. Okay, put it on top of your left hand. Put your thumbs together. Okay. Got that in your lap? Okay, now close your eyes. Sit real still, real, real still. And then I want you to breathe three times before you open your eyes. Okay, first breath. Second breath. And third breath. Okay, now open your eyes. Do you feel different? A little bit? Okay. Now, let's see if your parents can do that. Okay, parents. You got your right leg? Now start with your left leg. Come on. Yeah. Okay, left leg on the right thigh, right leg on the left thigh. Can mom and dad, can they do it? Okay, now you got to tell your parents. Okay. Now you got to tell your parents to sit up straight. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Then right hand. Okay. You got to do it at the same time too. Take your right hand. Put it on your left hand. Your thumbs are touching. Okay. And your parents lower their eyes. Okay, you guys got to sit real still. Otherwise, your parents can't do it. Okay. Okay. So let's do three breaths again. Okay. First breath. Second breath. Third breath. Okay, good. How did your parents do? Did they do okay? Yeah. You know, every day you got to tell your parents to sit down and do this, and you sit down and do it with them. Okay? Yeah. No, you don't just give orders. You don't just give orders to your parents. You tell your parents, we're going to sit down and do it together. Okay? And do it together. Okay? And then you do it together.
Then you do it together.
Yeah. Yeah, can you? Good. Okay. Now you can go to your classes. You're welcome. Hiya. So sometimes I think it's just as hard for the parents to sit still as for the kids. Yeah? And if you have just something like that that you do for like 1 or 2 minutes every day, it, you know, for both of you, you do it together with your kids, it can be, you know, a really nice kind of settling thing. Because you know, sometimes, I mean, we all know the kids are like bouncing off the walls. But if you just say to them, you know, sit down and be quiet, but they never see you sit down and be quiet, they have no example. Yeah? Whereas when they see you, take some time out and, you know, okay, I need to sit down and be quiet. Let's sit down and be quiet together. Then your kids have the example of what's the, what that's like, you know, and they know it can be done. And it's a time when you come together to do something. You're not sending them away. You sit down and be quiet because you need a time out. It's like, okay, we're going to do this together. And so you're bringing the family together in that way. Yeah, it's a really nice kind of thing. Doesn't take very long. Yeah. And then also, you know, each day with your children, bowing three times to the Buddha and then making an offering to the Buddha. You know, have a statue, you know, or some pictures or whatever, and then you make a small offering. I did this with, I stayed in one person's house some years ago, and her daughter was maybe about 3 or 4 or 5, you know, around that time. So every morning, my friend, you know, with her daughters, you know, made the prostrations to the Buddha, and then her she would give like a cookie or, you know, piece of fruit or something, and the little girl would give the Buddha a present, and then the Buddha gave the little girl a present every morning too. So it was a really nice, sweet ritual, and so from the time she was very young, she learned to do this kind of thing. Yeah. And so it's also very good for you because I'm sure Geshe Gelug tells you to make offerings and then you go, oh, I'm so busy, I forgot. I'd rather offer to my own mouth. Yeah? But if you, you know, get in this habit and do it with your child, it can be really very nice for both of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to do a little bit of silent meditation now. So we're going to focus on our breath. And the way we're going to focus on our breath, or the purpose here, is to help us calm the mind and develop a little bit of concentration. So you let your breathing be normal and natural. Don't force it. Don't take any deep breaths or do anything weird, but just normal and natural. And you pay attention. You know, what's happening as I'm inhaling? What's happening as I'm exhaling? And you be really mindful of that. Yeah. If you see your mind start to go away and get distracted to another object, then bring it back. Yeah, don't get mad at yourself for getting distracted. Just notice, okay, I'm off thinking about this or I'm listening to a sound or whatever it is. Bring your attention back to your breath. So your breath is like home. You keep bringing your focus back home to the breath. Yeah. You can put your concentration on your belly and watch the rise and fall of your belly. You can put it at your upper lip and nostrils and watch the sensation of the air as it goes there. Or you can just put it on your body in general and the sensation of the air flowing in and out of your body. Okay, but pick one of those three and then keep your focus there. I'll lead you through a little body relaxation before we do the breathing meditation, because that's very helpful. Sometimes we're storing some tension in our body that makes meditation difficult. Whereas if we take a minute or two to release that, it can really make sitting a lot easier. Okay, so if you can't sit cross-legged, then just sit however you're comfortable, but with your back straight, and your microphone out of the way, and hands right and left, thumbs touching. Lower your eyes. If you keep your eyes a little bit open, less chance of drowsiness. And so begin.
begin by feeling yourself sitting here on the cushion or on the chair, and to be aware of the sensations of your body against the cushion or the floor. And be aware of sitting in a room with like-minded people who support you in your practice. And also give your support to them. And then be aware of sensations in your feet and your legs. And if there's any tension there, then let that go. And be aware of sensations in your lower abdomen and your belly. And some people store their stress in their bellies, their bellies tight, constricted. If that's the case with you, try and relax your belly. Release that tension. Then be aware of sensations in your upper back, shoulders, chest, arms. If your back and shoulders are tight, as many of us put our tension there, then try lifting your shoulders up towards your ears. Lift them up as high as you can. Tuck your chin in a little bit. Hold it there. And then let your shoulders fall very quickly. That's quite good for releasing the tension. And then be aware of sensations in your neck, head, jaw, and face. If your jaw is clenched, then let that go. If your facial muscles are tight, let them relax. And be aware of your physical posture being firm and relaxed at the same time. And so similarly, your mind can be firm and concentrating, but also relaxed at the same time. And then become aware of your breath. Place your mindfulness on the breath so that you remember the breath as your object of meditation. Be aware of your breath as it goes in and out. And you can also be aware of the changing nature of your breath. How the breath doesn't remain the same in the next instant. It's something different. So be aware of the change as it's happening. And be aware also of how your breath is connected. connecting you to the rest of the universe. We're all breathing creatures. So we'll have around 20 minutes to do this. So in Buddhist circles, you hear a lot of talk about being in the present moment. But what in the world does that mean? And especially in Tibetan Buddhism, when we are told to also examine our previous actions and do purification, and to think about how we want to, what attitudes and emotions we want to have in the future and how to cultivate them. You know, it seems like we're also being told to go into the past and go into the future. So how do we put all of this together? Have you ever wondered that? Yeah? So the reason in the Tibetan tradition, that we talk about the past and the future is because both of them relate to the present. We don't have the present without having the past and without having the future, because the three times are designated in dependence on one another. You can't have one without having the other two. If we look at the present moment, what prevents us from being really aware and here in the present moment rather than just spacing out and living on automatic and acting out any kind of thought that happens to come in our mind? Okay, what is it that prevents us from doing that? It's usually because we're thinking about the past or planning for the future, something like that. And most of our thoughts of the past and our thoughts of the future have to do with either attachment or hostility, anger. Yeah, so the attachment, the clinging attachment, and the hostility, the animosity, take us out of the present moment and make us think about things in the past and things in the future. You may have noticed that when we were doing the breathing meditation. Did you have trouble staying on your breath right now with your breath? Yeah, why? What were you thinking about? Where is your mind going instead? Yeah, it goes all over. So it might go in the past of, well, last night, let's see, I saw this good movie and I went out to dinner with this person and we had a really nice time. And let's see, next Saturday, what are we going to do? Can I have such a good time with the same person next Saturday? So that kind of thought is, you know, dwelling on attachment, clinging to something, wanting to recreate a previous experience that we had. Yeah. Solidifying an experience, exaggerating how wonderful it was, wanting to recreate it in the future. So that takes us out of being here, because we're either reminiscing, oh, it was so nice last night, or it's going to be so nice next week. Okay, so that takes us away from being here. Or maybe in your meditation, you know, you're sitting down and you're breathing, and then it's like 5 years ago, my boss said blah, 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 and it's just like the boss that I have now, and today's Sunday, tomorrow's Monday, I'm going to go have to face that boss again. And I can't stand when people are giving me feedback on my projects when I didn't ask for that feedback. The least they could do is ask me if I want feedback and keep their bloody noses out of my business. And even if they're going to give feedback, they're instead of always noticing what I didn't do, they should tell me what I did do and praise me. I mean, all the textbooks for good management say that. Why doesn't my boss do that? Okay, so we're in the past with our anger and assuming anger in, you know, coming up next week. So here we are, you know, Sunday morning in a room full of wonderful people who really understand our spiritual propensities and encourage us and, you know, and want to help us practice. And we can't stay here with them. We're going off into what made us mad 5 years ago and what's going to make us mad next week. Okay. So if when we look at this, we see that attachment and hostility are, you know, are the two major things that take us away from really being present right now. Also, because with attachment and hostility, there's a lot going on, you know? It's like something's happening. And when we're sitting here and watching the breath, our mind says, this is boring. Yeah, I want something exciting to happen. And since, you know, the Buddha's not appearing to me in flashing colors, telling me that I'm almost enlightened. Yeah. And since I'm not having flashes of emptiness or overwhelming feelings of bodhicitta, then, you know, thinking about either my previous pleasure and my future pleasure or my previous drama and my future drama is going to be a lot more interesting. Yeah. So we get quite distracted, yeah? So this is why so often We are encouraged to do the meditations that counteract attachment and that counteract hostility. Yeah, so that we can see that even though those two emotions might kind of spark up, you know, give us some kind of rush of adrenaline, they aren't really very conducive for human happiness. But sometimes we have some resistance to eliminating our attachment and our anger because we're afraid, you know, well, if I'm not angry, I'm going to be a pushover. And if I give up my attachment, I'm not going to have any ambition. Yeah. These are real concerns of ours, you know. We think, oh, if I really become a Buddhist, I'm going to be a bump on a log. I'm just going to sit there. Yeah, I'm in the present moment, and it's so boring. Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't exaggerate anybody's faults, so I don't get angry at them. Don't exaggerate anybody's good qualities, so I don't crave them. I just sit here. Yeah, we get that kind of idea that, you know, that's the meaning of being a good Buddhist. False. Okay. If you're really practicing the Dharma, you never get bored. Never. Really. Yeah, if you're sincerely practicing, you never get bored because there's always something going on in your mind for you to look at. And there's always some way to generate bodhicitta wherever you are. Yeah. There's always some way to connect with some living being, because we're always in the presence of other living beings. Now, even if you go to a mountaintop way far away, you're still surrounded by other living beings. Where are you ever going to go in all of this universe where you're totally alone and do not exist in relationship to others? Yeah. Because existing in relationship to others doesn't mean you need to be right next to them. You can be zillions of light years away, but we still exist in relationship to others. So there's still the opportunity to connect on a real heartfelt level with others that doesn't involve being attached to them and doesn't involve having animosity towards them. Okay. So I think when they talk about being in the present moment, for me, it means bodhicitta. Yeah, it means having genuine love and compassion and the bodhicitta aspiration to become a Buddha for the benefit of sentient beings. Some people take, you know, being in the present moment that, you know, I just look a flower, and enjoy the flower, the beauty of the flower for right what it is. That's being in the present moment, you know. What's the use of doing that? Yeah? What's the use of just sitting there and enjoying something? Yeah, I'm in the present moment. I'm looking at the sunrise. Yeah, well, that's nice, but what's the use of it? What's the long-term purpose of just sitting there absorbed in some sense object that seems so beautiful? And I say this because this is what many people think being in the present moment is. I don't think that's what it really is. Yeah. And there's this story that you hear Buddhists tell that they don't. Many people in America, they come to the wrong conclusion from the story. The story is, I never tell it exactly right, but some guy who is, and don't ask me how he got there, but he's hanging on the edge of a cliff. Yeah, you heard this story? You know, somehow he fell off the cliff and he grabbed onto his branch, a branch on his way down, and he can't get up and he can't go down, but there's a strawberry in front of him. And so he picks the strawberry and enjoys it for that moment. And so you tell people, you hear people, Buddhists, saying, that's what living in the present moment means. You enjoy that strawberry while you're eating it. And I look at it and I go, so what? So what, you enjoy a strawberry? What lasting benefit is that? That's why I don't think that's the meaning of living in the present moment, just, you know, being with the sense objects. It has to be something more. It's, if you're looking at the strawberry, you're focusing on the impermanent nature of the strawberry. You're contemplating the emptiness of the strawberry. You're thinking how the strawberry exists by being dependent on the mind that conceives and labels it. Or you're wondering about who planted a strawberry there. You know, and the suffering of the person who planted a strawberry there. Okay, but something, it's got to be something more than just enjoying the strawberry on your way down to smacking the bottom. Yeah? And so, in the same way, in our life, yeah, rather than getting tangled up in the past, tangled up in the future, or just bored in the present, or involved in the sense objects in the present, then in the present moment, since we're always in relationship to sentient beings, yeah, thinking about bodhicitta in each moment. Okay, so you're sitting there in the traffic jam. Does Raleigh have traffic jams? Yeah, I think most major American cities do nowadays. So you're sitting there in the traffic jam. So sometimes you may contemplate impermanence, sometimes you may contemplate emptiness. But you also look at the other people in the cars around you. Yeah. And instead of seeing them as obstacles to your getting where you want to go, you think about their lives. Now, here's this person that wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. So there's the guy in the business suit, and we have lots of images, you know, lots of mental images of what a guy in a business suit is like. Some of them positive, some of them are negative, you know. And instead of projecting all of our images of the guy, you know, who this guy in the business suit in the car next to us is, just taking all of that away and thinking, they're a sentient being who wants to be happy and be free of suffering. That's all they are. Yeah. This appearance as a, you know, Wall Street banker or rich tech guy or whatever it is, that's just an appearance. Basically, it's a sentient being who wants to have happiness and not suffering, just like me. Yeah. And then the guy in this car, who's blasting their rap music, you know, with the deep bass. You know how that is? Bang, bang, bang. You know, who thinks that the rest of the world wants to hear the rap music, and that's why they have the windows rolled down with the misogynistic, you know, lyrics blasting to the world. You know, instead of putting all of our image of, you know, what this guy is listening to the rap music with the misogynistic lyrics is all about and putting that on top of that person, looking at him and saying, there's a sentient being who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. And that's something we know for sure about that sentient being. And you know what? That guy listening to the rap music and that one in the business suit, there's no difference between them, actually. So they both want to be happy. They both want to be free of suffering. And there's no difference between me and them either. because I just want to be happy and be free of suffering. And if I look at it, can I say anybody's happiness is more important than anybody else's happiness? Or that anybody's suffering is more important to alleviate than anybody else's suffering? I can't really do that. Yeah? All of our lives, all of us are equal in that way. All of us are exactly the same. So any thought I have of discriminating between others and projecting identities onto them, gotta let go of that. It's all inaccurate. And any thought I have of me being more important than them, that's also inaccurate. Gotta get rid of that one. And then just stay in that space of looking at everybody as simply a sentient being who wants to be happy, who doesn't want to suffer, who's under the influence of afflictions and karma. Oh my goodness. They're under the influence of afflictions and karma. They don't have any real freedom. Yeah, their ignorance is pushing them here and there. Their ignorance is making their attachment and their anger and their jealousy and their pride come up, and they're doing all these actions motivated by those. So whether it's the businessman doing actions of attachment or anger, or the guy with the rap music and the misogynistic lyrics doing actions out of attachment and anger, it's basically the same. They're both creating destructive karma. Yeah. And yet, they both want to be happy. And we've had very close relationships in previous lives with each other. They've both been kind to me in previous lives. In fact, they both may have been my parents in previous lives. And gotten up in the middle of the night to feed me when I was a screaming infant. Yeah. So that snotty guy in the business suit who thinks he's, you know, is so arrogant, you know, used to get up in the middle of the night and feed me when I cried. You know, I got to take away that criticism of, you know, that arrogant, thinking he's just some arrogant guy. And that one who's playing the rap music, who I think is out of his mind. Yeah. I mean, after all, he should like the music of my generation, not that stuff. Yeah, why isn't he playing Crosby, Stills, and Nash? And yeah, Simon and Garfunkel. Why is he playing that junk? You know, he too just wants to be happy, doesn't want to suffer, and has also been my parents in a previous life, and also gotten up in the middle of the night when I was a wailing infant to feed me. Yeah? So I've got to look beyond the superficial appearance of how people's appearance in this lifetime and all the stuff I project onto that appearance. And I've got to look into their hearts and see that basically everybody's the same. And everybody's also been kind to me. Yeah. And you do that right in the middle of the highway because you're not going anywhere. Yeah. And it becomes a very profound experience. And then you see somebody, you know, in the car ahead of you with their kid who is wailing in the back seat. I want to go home. Why can't we get there faster? And, you know, and you open your heart to that kid. Now that kid just wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. And they've also been my dear parents in previous lives and been kind to me. And so So everywhere we look, every living being we see, now all of a sudden you see a fly in your car. And instead of reaching for, you know, something to swat the fly with, you look at it and you say, that fly just wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. And they've taken care of me in my previous lives with much love. And what a horrible tragedy that they've been born as a fly this lifetime. May they be free of these kind of lower rebirths. Yeah? So you everywhere you look, there's some sentient being. And you think about that sentient being's life and their lack of freedom, their being controlled by afflictions of karma, afflictions and karma. And you generate compassion, wanting them to be free, and love, wanting them to be happy. And I think that is living in the present moment. Because when you train your mind in that way, then you can connect with who's ever standing in front of you in that moment. You are connected with that person. And not connected in a way of attachment or hostility, but connected in a really valuable way where that person is helping you to cultivate love and compassion. And then your love and compassion pushes you on to bodhicitta. And bodhicitta makes your life really meaningful. So, we're 2 minutes over time. But think about that and try and practice that. You know, especially if you're waiting in the line at the supermarket. Yeah, while you're waiting for your cell phone to turn on. Yeah, or your computer to turn on. Put, you know, on your screensaver, put bodhicitta. Huh? Then your colleagues at work, you know, or maybe your kids will come and say, what's that word? What does that mean? And then, wow, you have an avenue in to expose them to the Dharma. And they asked you, so you're not pushing it on them. They asked you, what does that word mean? And so you tell them. Hmm? Okay.
So if you'll turn to the white prayer book, to the first pink sheet, we say the dedications. But before we do, I'd like to read the names and dedications for our sponsors. Michelle Matich, to the benefit of all beings, to all local Buddhist teachers, to Geshe-la, to venerable children, and to the successful completion of Chenrezig Hall at Shravasi Abbey. An anonymous donor, may the Sangha thrive, and may the teaching and practice of the Dharma increase for the benefit of all sentient beings. Jill Marie, Julie Cox, Matilda Parker, for the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas as the 10 directions and for the great enlightenment. May all beings have the good fortune to have the teaching so rare and so beautiful quickly in their lives, and may the seeds we receive this weekend ripen to benefit all sentient beings for their future enlightenment. And the prayer list, prayers for happy rebirth, all those killed by natural and man-made disasters, especially those of the Boston Marathon, all the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom, Ruth Appleby, Ron Burroughs, Claire Caruso, Bill Johnson, Claudia Kunt, Sam Rainey, Mamie Stark, Chelsea the cat, Dakota the dog, Ivy the dog, Cook the cat, Shanti the dog, Job Search, Kim Conway, Daniel Dimitrov. Prayers for for health and well-being. let's see. Kyabjai Lama Zopa Rinpoche, Venerable Chirkila, all those harmed by natural and man-made disasters, especially those at the Boston Marathon. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Jim Barnes, Zolar Barnes, Roseanne Barona, Becky, Megan, and Marianne Burke, Ron Burroughs family, Victoria Easterday Clark, June Elliott, Guillermo Garcia and family, Gary Goldberg, Mildred Gooch, Scott Griffin and family, Ken and Annie Hassel, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Bill Johnson's family, Helen Kasanoff, Meredith Kilmer, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Gary Marshall, Aaron Mervin and his family, Shelley Miller, Adrian Oliver, Jay Pandya, Jeff Peterson and family, Aunt Polly, Chuck and Faye Renard, Carl Rich, Scooby Rodriguez, Dr. Albert Sants, Rosemary Cease, Dion Washington, Suzanne Williams, Kathy Wormser, Judith Wormser, the ZSI chapter of Pi Kappa Phi at Everett University, Loki the cat, and Pierre the dog. If you have any names to add, would you please say them now? May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion. With the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatar, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bear of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. 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 Om tare tu tare tu re so ha.
Anyway, there's some brochures out on the table there from Srivasti Abbey. We have a lot of Dharma materials online on the TuptonChildren.org website and the ShrivastiAbbey.org website. So there's a lot of videos. We do a little video talk, 5-10 minutes every day, called Bodhisattva Breakfast Corner, that's on YouTube, that many people enjoy. You know, it's short and sweet, enough to get you through a cup of coffee. And then longer teachings, and then on TuptonChildren.org, there's all sorts of material too. So please feel free to take a booklet. It has both of the website addresses, and then take a look at the Dharma material there.
And I'm going to add on to that, that Venerable Chodron has very kindly agreed to do a book signing now in our bookstore. And so we have her books available for sale, and proceeds from sales in our bookstores go to benefit our Stupa project, which you've probably seen evolving over the past year into this amazing representation of the Buddha's mind. So it's money well spent. So thank you.